And it was a pretty good crowd at Torrey Pines. We had a streaker, you know, a hippie run onto the course and launch two balls into the ocean and then dodge bullets and then get taken down by a cart security guard. Paul Blart comes out of nowhere and tackles this guy. It's a pretty impressive move. But John Rahm does it. Those putts on 17 and 18, clutch, man. That is clutch. And here is former pro golfer, NBC and Golf Channel analyst, been on the show many times before. He was live at Torrey Pines. Here is Nota Begay. How you doing, Nota?
Well, speaking of live, I was on the 13th fairway about 150 yards up the fairway looking at Bryson DeChambeau's terrible lie in the rough when I saw the streaker. And there were two security guards in our group that ran back to try and help. They both whiffed on their tackles, by the way. And then it was the guy in the cart coming in like a rodeo bulldogger and then jumping off the cart and taking down the steer. It was quite impressive.
What a move. Like, you can't be trained for that. Like, a cart tackle.
That's all talent and instinct, guys, you know? You don't train for that at the academy.
No, that's like tin cup talent, man. You just have it. And he found a way to make that work last night.
Yeah, you just got to know where to put your face when you're tackling a streaker, because it's do or die. It's do or die at that point.
Yeah, you may want some face or head.
We've talked about Peter Jacobson, what he was up to when he tackled that guy at the British Open. He had some stuff.
Peter about that, and he's like, you know, I got lucky there. I have no football training, but I got lucky that my face didn't end up in the wrong spot when we were tumbling down to the ground.
It was close enough for it to go viral and for it to come up on our show.
He had half a barn door there.
Yeah, there was something going on. But, it's funny because obviously Rahm steals the show. The back nine, like, you and I, we were texting when, I don't know, I guess they were starting, the leaders were closing in on the back nine, and we were saying
it turned into a C-flight club championship.
It did, but at one point we're like, this is the greatest leaderboard we've seen maybe of all time. Like, what were you thinking, Nota, with about an hour and a half left to play? You must have been thinking this could go a variety of ways.
Well, Bryson nearly makes the hole-in-one at 8, so he heads to 19, which is reachable for him, and he has he's tied for the lead at 5 under. So walking down 9 fairway, there was 11 players within 2 shots of the lead. 5 were tied for the lead at 5, and then there were 6 more players at 4 under, 1 shot back. So I'm thinking, my goodness, we really got ourselves a barn burner here, and then everybody just hit a brick wall at 10, 11, and 12, and 13, which just, it was carnage out there, guys. Guys just, you know, both the guys in my group, Scottie Scheffler and Bryson DeChambeau, who both had a chance to win at the start of the day, both walked off the 13th green with double bogeys, just to kind of give you an indication of how hard that hole was playing yesterday.
Nota, we were talking about DeChambeau's approach, how it's bomb and gouge, which is, that's his formula, and that's what he's going to stick to. But, like, I just watch these guys sometimes, and it's like, Louis on the 17th hole, why isn't his caddy giving him a 3-wood there, and it's 3-wood pitching wedge or 9-iron on that hole, but he's got to pull out the driver. All he had to do, he probably could have got it close. I just don't understand how they don't dial back sometimes. It's just they're hitting the driver no matter what.
Yeah, and that's kind of been the mentality. I mean, even if you go down through the ranks, and I just came off doing the NCAA Men's and Women's Division I Championships here in the U.S., and it's hard to find a swing speed on any of those men's college rosters that's below 120. And so when you have a weapon in your bag like that, there's a tendency to sort of want to use it all the time, and I just think that's the general culture out here on the PGA Tour, is players sort of want to feel like they can overpower or utilize their distance to a huge advantage. But agreed, I think that, I don't know about dialing back to a 3-metal or anything like that for Louis on 17, but golly, there was 200 yards right of that canyon he would have found dry land and had a chance to walk off with a 4 and give himself a chance to get into a playoff, and instead hits it into the canyon left, which was, you know, basically ended his hopes of winning his first U.S. Open.
Chatting with Nota Begay, former pro golfer, NBC and a Golf Channel analyst. He was there live at Torrey Pines for the U.S. Open, and prior to Oosthuizen putting it in the canyon and effectively handing the tournament to Jon Rahm, Jon Rahm had to go legend down the stretch. And, you know, he makes that massive putt on 17 and then doubles down with effectively the same putt on 18. But his strategy out of the bunker was one that I give him credit for in retrospect. Like, he didn't even go at the pin. He was like, I got to push it up. And
the water was right there.
Exactly. And listen, a poor approach. He put it in the bunker to begin with. But those two putts, I mean, you've seen a lot of clutch putting in your day, Nota, but back-to-back in the fashion that they were for U.S. Open, his first major, how do you put that into perspective for Jon Rahm?
Those are the two biggest back-to-back putts I've seen on that stage with that kind of pressure, you know, possibly in history. I mean, those were all breaking, you know, in the vicinity of 2 to 4 feet. Maybe more at 18, and they're left to right. That's the hardest putt for a right-hander to hit. And for him to make them in succession under that pressure, trying to win his first major, is absolutely incredible. But going back to your point about laying up, so Jon Rahm took a lot of heat a few years ago when he was had the lead well in hand at the Players' Championship and failed to lay up. On the 11th hole on Sunday, when I think he had a 2 or 3 shot lead, he tried to hook something crazy out of a fairway bunker around these tree limbs onto the very difficult green to hit at the 11th. It went in the water. It was disastrous. Ended up taking any chance of him winning that tournament away. So you move a few years forward, the maturity, the experience, the scar tissue, he lays up. There was never consideration to try and do anything stupid there, and inevitably his putter sort of secures the U.S. Open title for him, which I think is fitting. You know, he was the tournament favorite heading into the tournament, and I think he's one of the first favorites in quite some time to actually go out and win a tournament.
Nota, walking around with DeChambeau, and when things started going a little squirrely there, the crowd probably had multiple pints in them. What kind of vocabulary were you hearing out there? Was it getting kind of greasy, or were people behaving for the most part? Because he's just got kind of an awkward relationship with the fan base. I think people respect him, but at the same time, I don't think he's a big fan, or people aren't a big fan of his for some reason. How was it out there?
Well, Bryson's great for golf, great for sports. Great for us in the media, because you either like them or you don't. And there's not very many people that sort of sit on the fence and are kind of in between. And so there was a lot of both. There was, you know, some heckling, but there was also a lot of support out there for Bryson, because they do appreciate sort of what he's brought to the game. You know, he's a classic disruptor. You know, he went out and he disrupted a sport that's predicated on tradition and a lot of things that have been around for a long time. And he went out and he just, you know, he tries to beat these courses to death, and he managed to do it successfully at Wingfoot. Came a little bit short here. I mean, I give him a pass on the 44. I mean, you know, that can happen, you know, when you lose your cool and you know you can't win the tournament, you just kind of go on tilt. And, you know, he had a distinct chance to win. Whenever you're tied for the lead with less than 9 holes to play, you certainly have a real chance to win the golf tournament.
Well, he was certainly one of the big stories of the weekend, and the leaderboard was in general. And now we've only got one major left this summer. They'll be back at the Open Championship in about a month. But we'll get you out of here on Torrey Pines in general, because the course, it's a polarizing course, the way it sets up, the way it plays. Some fans love it, some fans don't. What do you make of Torrey at, you know, on the biggest stage? This is the second time it's hosted the U.S. Open. I believe they'll be back there in the future. How do you feel about the course as a U.S. Open track?
I love the course. I love it. First and foremost, it requires you to hit every single club in your bag. You go through a round of golf, and every single club in your bag has gotten dirty that day. But I also judge the quality of a venue based upon what kind of leaderboard it produces. And at one point on Sunday, five of the top 10 players, the top five actually, numbers 1 through 5, all sat within 1 or 2 shots of lead. That tells me that the venue is identifying who are actually the best players in our game, because there's a reason that they're ranked 1 through 5. It's a two-year rolling average. They played the best golf over the last 2 years of anybody in the world. But it also leaves room for a Russell Henley, a Richard Bland, players like that to come up and have a real legitimate chance of contending. Obviously, they didn't hold on. But to me, that's sort of the mark of a high-quality major championship golf course.
Always great catching up with you. I know it's been a busy 4 or 5 days down there. So thank you for doing this, Noto. We'll do it again down the road.
All right, love you guys. Have a great summer. Enjoy some golf. Thanks.
You got it. There's Noto Begay, former pro golfer, NBC and the Golf Channel analyst. That leaderboard was spectacular with, you know, Koepka up there, Morikawa was up there, Rahm
was
up there.
Dude, it was the best leaderboard on a Sunday that anyone could have ever imagined.
Yeah, it was incredible. And, you know, it's too bad for Mackenzie Hughes, Russell Henley. You knew it early yesterday. You're like, this guy just isn't going to be able to keep up.
Melted.
Well, let's not be Mackenzie Hughes. He played terrible yesterday. If that was anybody else, we would be saying other stuff that's not.
No,
that's
he melted.
Not,
yeah, it was,
yeah
it was,
he melted. He played terrible. And he knows that. We're not going to give him a hall pass because he's a good Canadian boy. He didn't perform well, and he knows that. And if he gets back there, he'll be better.
Right. And, like, the Russell Bland story. Or Richard Bland, your boy.
Dick Bland.
Yeah. You could feel it like Saturday. They showed every shot on Saturday, and I knew the way he came home on Saturday, it was like, you'll never see this guy again.
But why is that, though? Like, if you talk to anybody, it's like any text message with my golf buddies are like, Dick Bland, put him down for a 78-80, and it's like everyone that talked about Dick Bland is like, this guy is going to crater. And he just couldn't hold it together. It's
no,
like, as soon as there was like a bogey on the Saturday, his underpants disintegrated into thin air.
Didn't go so well.
And he was gone, man.
Feel it. He was, and on Saturday, man, he was making 8, 10, 12 foot par putts to hold on for dear life. And it was like, man, this is really starting to get out of control. And then again, but like you just knew it. When he putted out on Saturday, it was like, that is the last time Dan Hicks is going to say his name until maybe he taps in on 18 and they talk about how fun it
and
was.
And that's exactly when you heard his name
and
on
that
Sunday
was
when
there
he tapped
is.
In.
What, there is a great story, Richard Bland. We didn't show one shot of his today.
No.
But nice seeing you, nice knowing you, and maybe we'll catch up down the road. But John Rahm. We haven't mentioned what happened to him a couple of weeks ago, too, right? At the Memorial. He had a six-shot lead. COVID takes him out of the tournament. And for him to redeem himself like that.
$1.7 million gone.
And that's why we all had the reaction on the Monday, though. It's like, I feel for the guy, but I'm not going to shed tears because he'll make it up. He made it up 2 weeks later. He made $2.2 million or whatever yesterday. So John Rahm's going to be okay. He's living a pretty good life. He will continue to live a great life. But, I mean, that had the chance to be one of the great back-to-back tournaments in golf history. You win at the Memorial by lapping the field, then you close out with the U.S. Open 2 weeks later. That would have been a great back-to-back. This one's even more memorable because he got pulled out because of COVID and then immediately redeems himself or gets back on track and is healthy.
He did say
playing.
Something that was a little curious to me, that he said he was quarantining and they let him go early or something. I was like, man, was he supposed to say that? He let it out there. He was like, they let me go early. And I was like, how the hell did that happen? Or was that allowed to happen?
I think there's,
and how did he let it squeak out?
I think there's a protocol, though. You have to have a certain amount of negative tests. That's why. You know, so, I mean, sure, he passed that.